This is Geek Speak. I'm your host, Matt McBrayer from Roaring Fork Help Desk, in studio with Louie the Computer Guy.
Never believe this, Matt, but I was singing that song in the shower.
Great.
Sound of Music.
And
this morning.
And Brian Ward also joins us. He's a member of the Roaring Fork Technologists.
Pleasure to be here, Matt.
Great. As always, you can call into Geek Speak at 963-2976. 970-963-2976. So, we were having a rather spirited discussion for show prep today about how technology has been designed to bring us together, and it's had some unforeseen consequences and outcomes from that. So, we wanted to say, you know, there's so many echo chambers in the news cycle and everything. It can be very isolating into one way of thinking, as opposed to bringing a vast group of people together and
just having a
real discussion about how to look at these problems and how to analyze them and move forward with them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm amazed. I graduated from college in '99, kind of at the beginning of the dot-com bubble. So, you know, as technology has grown, I've sort of just been riding this technology wave through my professional career. And, you know, I'm amazed that, you know, there's so many technologies out there that bring us together, you know. And it started off, you had AOL and you know, you had Instant Messenger, and then there were chat rooms and all, and you had all these ability to connect with people that you previously could never have connected to. And you know, you could just, it became so much easier to just to meet people from all around the world. And you think, wow, this is great. This will bring us together. And I feel like that was one of, you know, Mark Zuckerberg's things when he was talking about Facebook, about how, you know, this is a platform to bring people together. And, you know, here we are in 2018, and it seems like we've never been more divided. So the question that I'm passionate about is how did we get here? How did we get from all this technology designed to bring us apart to a society, or to bring us together to a society that's, you know, never been more divided? So that's really the question that I have. And, you know, when we talk about tech and geek speak, that's why I wanted to come in and talk about it and get to hear what listeners think or what you guys think. And let's talk about it.
Yeah. So we want to encourage our listeners to give us a call and weigh in at 963-2976. It's a pretty provocative subject, you know, I think. And, you know, one of the things that I want to throw in there is that, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I really, truly, and, you know, part of me wants to think that it's therapeutic for me, but I mean, I am much more willing to throw down some controversial viewpoint, you know, on Facebook in a post than I am, you know, sitting across the table from somebody, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if, especially, you know, if I really want to take issue with something that they're, you know, trumpeting, and there's no pun intended there, it's something that they're really blasting out on Facebook or whatever, I will be far more likely, because, you know, quite honestly, I'm a pretty nice guy and I'm kind of a chicken shit, you know? And, so, I mean, how much of it, you know, I think that plays a pretty big role in it. I think, you know, the people's lack of, you know, they don't have the same censoring, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's not being in public and having to look at the anger in somebody's face, you know, or getting to read that nonverbal communication, which is definitely a key.
Or being afraid that they're going to reach across the table and, you know, blacken your eye or something, you know?
Here was a thought that I had, was that, you know, and you talk about that divisiveness, and, you know, back in the day, I feel like people kind of had to gravitate towards the center, right? And the meaning is that, you know, you had everybody was reading the same newspaper and they were going to the same church and attending the same kind of public activities. And if you were too radical in your views, you were sort of not really appreciated by the herd, right? So people kind of had to gravitate towards the center. But now with technology, it doesn't matter what you think. Chances are you're going to find somebody that agrees with you, no matter how radical it is. So in one way, like this, because of technology, it's encouraged people to be more radical and less kind of compromising, because they know they're going to find somebody that agrees with them. Does that?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, and I guess, you know, the only thing that I, you know, kind of, it's such a complex subject, you know, and one of the things that I kind of wonder about is, you know, going along with that, you would think that people that live in more populous areas, because those people are more likely to find, you know, living, breathing human bodies to convene with that share their views, you know? So wouldn't it go to follow that those people would be less active on social media? But I don't think that's true, you know?
Yeah.
It's, you know, so.
Have you ever been at the dinner table where two people at the dinner table are texting each other?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, if we talk about, you know, these modern problems, like, yeah, you can't even say something. People are actually texting one another at the same dinner table.
I had that blow up in my face one time because I was like, I was with a couple of guys that I didn't know. And one of them was like had really extreme, you know, he was like really anti-Obamacare. And he was actually a doctor, you know, and he had his really good reasons to be anti-Obamacare. And this other guy sitting next to me is like totally like railing about how everybody's attacking Obamacare. And he's like, oh, totally for Obamacare, you know? And so I'm like, you know, texting him going, dude, the guy at the end of the table really does not like Obamacare. And you do not want to pull the scab off of this, you know? Right. And the only problem was, is that I used the guy at the end of the table's name and the guy next to me didn't actually know what his name was. And he looks at his phone and he goes, who's so-and-so? So-and-so looks at me and I'm like, oh, I'm so busted.
Oh man.
It was horrible. But anyway.
Well, maybe so. If we can agree though, that technology has allowed us to connect with the people who share our same views. If that's, you know, it's really easy to, you know, say I have a radical view and I start preaching it, you know, through social media or just using technology and the internet. And then people start to find me and they start to join me or otherwise, you know, I find somebody that I really resonate with and I just kind of fall into their tribe. So I think, you know, you mentioned something around echo chambers. It's really easy to just surround ourselves with people who agree with us, right? And no matter what we stand for. And that's kind of seems that, you know, in a very connected world, that kind of seems to think how things have played out. So given the fact that we're kind of stuck in this, you know, tech-enabled tribalism, how can tech solve this? You know, like, what do we do? You know, do we have to restructure government?
Well, and we have the whole, and then you also have the whole internet trolls. Our mutual friend brought that up, you know. So we have, you know, the whole troll phenomenon. So you have people who, you know, what percentage of the flat earthers think the earth is actually flat?
Right.
You know, and then the rest of them are just out there to go, oh, you can't prove that the earth is a sphere. And, you know, they're just, you know, it's anonymous, so they can just do whatever they want. And they can be, you know,
isn't it the fish-eyed lens? Is that like their claim that, you know, for those pictures, like when you're really like in orbit, it's like, no, they're using a fish-eyed lens. That's why the earth is curved.
Mm-hmm. It knocks the corners right off.
Right.
So I don't know. I've never given it enough. I've just gone, no, that's not how this works.
Yeah.
Well, I'd love to hear somebody, you know, who's listening's opinion on this. You know, this is a really fun topic to talk about. And the three of us have been talking about it for a while now. Is there anybody out there that wants to talk about that?
963-2976. Call in with your questions.
Or if your printer's not working, you can call us about that too. So, but, you know, I think part of it is that, you know, and this is an observation that my wife came up with, is that the prevalence of opinion that has, you know, she was like specifically targeting in the new, you know, quote, air quotes, news media world, how, you know, the uprising of opinion and the injection of opinion into what is supposedly the news media. And the problem is that we have certain products out in the media now that are branded with the word news, N-E-W-S, that a large percentage of them or a significant percentage of what is put out under that label is not news anymore. It's not just because the whole goal of the news industry used to be to just, you know, put out this really, I don't want to say sanitized, but pretty sanitary accounting of what happened and what's going on and allow people to make their own, form their own opinions on their own side that they can discuss at the dinner table, you know, with the family. And I think that whole phenomenon has really crept over into social media, you know, and I think it's become, I'm willing to bet that far more than 50% of the so-called air quotes facts that you come up with online are not facts. They're opinions.
This is when you use that funny quote from the Big Lebowski when the dude goes, "That's just like your opinion, man."
Yeah.
I feel like I've been saying that a lot.
Love that quote. Yeah. Yes.
So, I mean, you talk like, you know, there's freedom of speech, right? So, and when you have technology, you're enabled, you know, you can speak whatever and you're going to find your tribe, right? So you talk about like how people are ingesting their news and forming their opinions. And what you said in the media, it's no longer just kind of a sanitized, you know, central version. You make up your own mind. Mm-hmm. You know, you can go to one site and, you know, they're going to tell, you know, from this perspective. And then yeah. you go to another site and it's going to be the completely opposite perspective. And then yeah. you start fighting over it. And so, you know, the same, there's studies on that, like comparing CNN to Fox or, you know, NPR. Like, mm-hmm. what do we do about it? I mean, everybody's just surrounding themselves with the stuff they want to hear. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the facts are very rarely, you know, you don't see at the end of an article it says, you know, I got this piece of information. You know, there's no citation, you know, for where they got these pieces of information and how they analyzed. You know, I don't mind somebody taking information, analyzing, and then providing an opinion. That's you know, something that people need to do. Mm-hmm. But it'd be really nice to start seeing people have, you know, good pieces of information to say, okay, well, I got this from, you know, the FBI, I got this from so-and-so, I got this from the CDC, mm-hmm. and, you know, I put this all together and then manipulated the data and looked at it, and, you know, this is my conclusion. Yeah. And it's very rare to see that in an article.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there's also the footnotes, but I also think it's actually the news person themselves. You know, I think back in the day, newsreaders and the anchors of various networks were seen as respected, you know, middle of the road people, you know, your Dan Rathers and whatnot, right? I'm trying to think who else. Uh-huh. Ted Koppel.
Yeah. You know, and so, you know what? I would give a shout out to, you know, I was listening to an interview being done by Chris Wallace from Fox. Oh, yeah. And, you know, he's the real deal.
He's a great interviewer. You know,
he's a real newsman. And he absolutely, you know, whenever you hear about rumblings in the foundation over at Fox, his name is usually involved because he's like shaking things up going, look, guys, you know, I took a job at a news organization here. You know, I'm trying to be a news guy here.
Yeah. You know? And it seems to me, though, that especially, you know, with the tax on the media and whatnot, that the Mike Wallaces of the world, to use your example, they no longer have that respect. Mm-hmm. And people are willing to say, oh, you know, you're just making up your own fake news, right? It's and that you know, we could talk a little bit about that. Like, it seems to me the fake news is just actually news that you don't like, that there's nothing actually fake about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. Is that controversial? What do you guys think?
Well, I think some of that stems from differing definitions.
Right.
So yeah. It's like, you know, if you are coming at something from a particular viewpoint, you might say, you know, value X, anything greater than value X, which is maybe 3, is, you know, something we need to talk about, where somebody coming from the other point of view would call it the same thing and say, well, that value is actually 5. And so you get, you know, somebody saying, well, there were 17 of them, you know, of this thing that happened, you know, over the course of the last year. And the other person says, well, there's 248 of them, and they both call them the same thing, but their definitions are entirely different.
Right. So who's wrong? Mm-hmm. Someone's got to be wrong, right?
Well, we just need to, you know, you need to say, well, what's the definition? And then, you know, then look at the data and figure out if it's the truth or not, or, you know, or if are you morally obligated to do that?
That's truly an engineered solution. I respect that. You know, that's logical, and that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's, you know, but it seems to me that there's more of a cultural skew to it. You know?
Oh yeah, and that's something I from my perspective, I don't understand the cultural skewing of things. I look at the data. It's like, okay, I read an article, and then I go if something seems out of whack, I go and, you know, find the data and look at it and go, well, wait a minute. This is you've massaged this in a certain way. You know, it's like 99% of statistics are made up on the spot.
Right.
You know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's like you have to go validate what
did you just make that one up?
Absolutely. But it's somewhere between 97% and 98%, I'm sure.
Right. Yeah, no. I rarely do people go back and check these facts, right? So you can kind of get away with it if you sound convincing enough.
You know, my criteria has always been the difference between news and fake news. News is something that a camera can capture, you know. And it's kind of like, you know, when you watch a football game, there's two guys in the booth. You know, there's the play-by-play guy. And when he tells you that the ball's on the 22-yard line on the left hash, you know, that's what's going on, you know. And then the other guy's the color commentator, and he's just, you know, he's like telling you a story about, you know, this guy and, you know, he got busted for DUI last weekend, or we think he's going to be traded. He's just not producing like they're expecting, you know. And eventually, you know, and the problem is there's got to be a balance between that camera checkable stuff and the color commentary. And, mm-hmm. you know, if we just get, you know, if we get immersed in the color commentary, then all of a sudden, you know, a whole season's gone by and we have no idea who won.
Right.
You know? Or, you know, and I don't mean that I don't really like the concept of winning and losing or the winners and losers, but I mean, it's like we just really don't know what the outcome, you know, is if we're like all washed up and, you know, we know a bunch of like really emotional, pretty much useless facts about the subject, you know, but, so anyway, that's my, you know, my take on fake versus not fake.
Yeah. You're right, listening to Geek Speak on KDNK, 963-2976. Have a few minutes left. Sorry. No, we're good.
You're going awful fast there, man.
It's how it is.
You got that number memorized.
Oh yeah, it's seared into my brain. I'm sure you took a, you know, cap off my skull. There's probably a number. It's on the surface there somewhere.
Tattooed.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, we've talked a lot about the problem, and, you know, let's maybe, if we have some time left, let's talk about possible solutions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot, and, you know, throughout my life, I've realized, you know, that it's the easiest way to kind of influence somebody. People have to make up their own mind. You know, it's really hard to say, you know, this is why you should do something. There, you mm-hmm. know, some people are like, oh, yes, okay, that's why I should do it. But oftentimes, I think a lot of people need to discover these things on their own, right? And so if we're getting divided, right, and, you know, we're you know, you see just, it's right now there's two camps, but, you know, what if there were four camps or eight camps? You know, it seems to me that the only way that we're going to really get back together is if we let this tribalism run its course, mm-hmm. right, and we let things break up. You know, I think they were talking about California getting split up into three different states. You know, like, what if people were able to just create their own little tribes, and we do become so disconnected? Mm-hmm. I think that people will then realize, hey, this sucks. Yeah. Now it's time to get back together.
Well, looks like we got a caller.
Hey, you're on with the Geeks.
Yes, my name is Jerome Dayton. I called in a couple of months ago about NAS server and backups and whatnot. We have a Geek Fest. And at any rate, I've spent the last month or so doing a lot of slicing and dicing in Excel of voter data, and had resisted learning Visual Basic for Applications, which is the macro language for Excel, and just finally decided to break down and do it. And found out, I'm wondering how anybody without a programming background actually deals with that. I'm wondering if you guys have had any exposure to doing macros in Excel.
You're taking me way back, but I do. back in college, I took a Visual Basic course.
Yeah, and I've actually all of the programming I've actually been commissioned for and written two commercial apps, and they were all written in VB.net. Actually, the first one was written in Visual Basic, and the second one was written in .net, which is, you know, a continuation of VB. But you know, the great thing, the biggest resource, in my opinion, is. You can, there are thousands, if not tens of, or hundreds of thousands of other people just like you that are pondering. And chances are, if you know how to construct a good Google query on the problem that you're having, or, you know, the result that you're trying to get, chances are somebody else has been there before. And,
actually, that's not the nature of my question. I've been doing exactly that, and I've managed to get through all my stuff, and I spent a lot of time doing C#.NET, so I'm really familiar with that
all
whole
right.
environment.
Good, good.
Visual Basic is kind of got halfway to a .NET language. It's pretty sad in a lot of ways. But my question more is, I pity the Power Excel user that tries to do macros, and wondering if there's like a support group, or if there'd be a demand for somebody that understands this to actually teach a course at Colorado Mountain College.
You know, I just don't know if we've got enough population around here. I'll bet you in the big city you could probably find that at a community college. You know.
Well, no, I'm thinking about maybe doing the course after.
Do it. Well, yeah.
I think.
But I just didn't know if there's that many power users, and if you guys have gotten asked to help out people trying to do spreadsheets and whatnot.
Well, people are always asking for help on spreadsheets, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and that's true. I mean, thinking more about your problem, have you? I think my solution would be to not work in an Excel and actually just use the comma separated value file and just export it as comma separated value. And then you could import that using the language that you want, and you could apply whatever sorts of algorithms you want and just treat it as, you know, CSV and load it up as arrays. That way, you can, you know, paint in the colors that you like and instead of, you know, having to speak Microsoft.
Right, right. And yeah, I've done a ton of SQL work. In fact, I can get my hands on Access pretty easily. But I was just wondering, the poor Excel power user would be a demand.
Well, I think you could. I think you could probably intrigue people if you were to like do a VB.net, you know, programming class. And there's not a very big jump from where you're at right now. I mean, you've done all the dirty work. At this point, and there are a lot of people that are really intrigued by programming, and I'll bet you have 50% attrition by halfway through the semester. You know, people whose eyes have glazed over, you know, or ended up in the funny farm. Yeah. But as far as filling a class up, you know, programming is pretty sexy. Excel is not.
Oh, really?
So,
okay, I would think with all the people that live and die on Excel because it's the favorite tool. Of fact, there was an article I just read a while ago about somebody extolling CFOs to ban Excel because too many people are trying to make Excel do things it was never designed to do, because you can write a full app in it. Put a gun to my head and pull the trigger, please.
Yeah, well, you know, that's how I became a computer guy. I had an old 8088 computer, and I wrote this humongous spreadsheet in Lotus 1-2-3. And I basically built my own version of Quicken using Lotus 1-2-3. But the problem after I got about 3 months worth of checkbook data in there, you would like enter a number and then hit the enter key, which is what you would do to get it to recalculate the sheet. And it would take 3.5 minutes. And eventually smoke started coming out. Well, not quite, but it was pretty close. And that's when I had to go get it. I went and got my first 386, you know, at that point. So but I was just going to say, I mean, I would much rather, if I was telling somebody, no, I can't get together with you tonight, I'm going to programming class. I mean, that sounds a lot better than I'm going to Excel class. You know, that's all I'm saying. So,
all right. Yeah. Well, just food for thought. I was just trying to decide if I wanted to go through the pain of developing a course or not.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for the call so much.
All right. Talk to you later. Okay.
You've been listening to Geek Speak on KDNK. Brian Ward, thank you for
Is it done already?
Yeah, 26 minutes goes quick when you're having fun.
Oh my gosh, that was so much fun.
You wasted another 25 minutes of your life.
Well, no, this is great.
Well, happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yep, we'll be back first week in December.
And if you needed a call about calibrating your digital thermometer, it's too late. So good luck with that.
Everybody be nice this holiday.
Yeah.